as far as I understand it, there's two paragraphs that have been questioned in a 1,600-page document. And I would like any of your listeners to have ever written any document of 1,600 pages long 2 years ago, that after 2 years they haven't found one or two paragraphs that they might wish to rewrite.
But these are just not typographical errors. These are errors of fact.
Yeah. So after 2 years, people have been going over that report with considerable care and have found a couple of errors of facts in a 1,600-page document. But I mean, we ought to be talking about the other 1,599 pages that no one has found any problems with.
One major mistake may be able to be excused, but to have another key finding, this link between extreme weather and climate change that many international leaders, including Australia's Prime Minister, relied on in their Copenhagen submissions, also found to be questionable, surely that's a major problem for the whole enterprise, isn't it? It calls into question the whole credibility of the IPCC process.
I don't think so. The first, the Himalayan glacier melt, is an error. We need to be clear on that error. It doesn't say that the Himalayan glaciers are not vulnerable to climate change or are not melting or are not melting at an accelerating rate. It is the date of 2035 or 2040 that is in error. There's no suggestion that the Himalayan glaciers aren't melting at an accelerating rate and are not threatening the fresh water supply to Indian and Chinese communities. It is. It's just that the date of 2035 is an error, and it's looking like it's much further into the future than that.
Well, it's an error. It's out by about 300 years, and you've had several of your scientists pick up that error, and then that's not translated into the final report. Surely, as a scientist that's put your name to this document, that's a major problem.
Of course. I don't believe any scientist would say other than, of course, to that question, and reflect on the fact that due science care and attention, after that, 2007 report has drawn attention to the error. No one has ever suggested that scientists never make mistakes. The important thing is that the mistake has been identified. I also draw attention to the fact that this was not in the summary for policymakers. It didn't form part of the document that policymakers usually read. It was lost in the depths of the report. And if anybody honestly thinks that you can write 1,600 pages without any errors, then they have a level of perfection that I don't think is realistic in any part of our society or our lives.
Well, the head of the IPCC, Rajendra Pachauri, is now being seen to benefit from that false Himalayan glacier claim with a funding grant to his institute. That just plays right into the argument of the sceptics, doesn't it, that climate scientists are making all of this up in order to get funding for their research?
I have to admit that it looks extremely bad. I don't know what the nature of the full proposal was in Pachauri's application. It would certainly be focused on a whole range of areas of climate change and climate science or impacts. The summary that you refer to would reflect the broad nature of the proposal, but probably not the detail. But absolutely looks bad. I mean, but looking bad and actually undermining the broad conclusions that are in the IPCC report are two very different things. And there isn't a single piece of science, none, that points to flaws in the broad conclusions of the IPCC report that the Earth's warming, it's warming due to human activities, it's warming due to increased greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and it's an immediate and really very significant international problem. There are no doubts about those conclusions.
Well, but doubts might be there in the public mind, because if you have two significant claims that are made in this 2007 IPCC report that the IPCC itself says need to be looked at, that does tend to call into question in the public's mind the credibility of the entire report.
I think we would ask serious questions of any organisation that didn't review its procedures regularly, and I'm sure the IPCC will review its. However, we should be very clear on what the IPCC does. It writes a report that's fully open to external review by any of your listeners. They can each read over individual sections of the report and send in critical comments. We, each author, has to comment and reply to every single one of those comments that's overseen by an additional independent editor and by government. So each government tries to pore over each of the statements to find fault with them. And at the end of that process, future drafts are produced, again with opportunities for external examination and feedback, and you end up with a final report, which in this case some people have found one or two errors with after 2 years. I reckon that's a standard that most organizations would absolutely celebrate. Is it perfect? No one has ever suggested that it's perfect. Are the broad conclusions in the report true? Absolutely. There is no science to contradict the broad conclusions.
Well, let's look at that link between extreme weather and climate change that was made in an article that was being submitted for peer review and made it into the 2007 IPCC report. I mean, once that article was reviewed, peer reviewed, the point was called into question, the IPCC did not revise its report to reflect that. What possible excuse is there for that if there are so many people, as you say, poring over all these articles?
When there is a paragraph in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report that's out for external review, one might get 20, 30, 50 individual review comments to a particular statement. So one, a lead author is responsible for several pages of that report and maybe receives 400-500 independent comments. Their job is to go over those comments and reach a judgment based upon the peer-reviewed science that allows that statement to be defendable. Now, I haven't seen the detailed comments on the particular text you're referring to because it wasn't a section I was responsible for, but if there were 20 or 30 comments saying, yes, this is correct, yes, this is defensible, and there's one or two comments saying there's a problem with this particular text, the individual author may have reached the expert judgment that the particular material in the report was sound and reliable. That turns out, in hindsight, to have been perhaps an error of judgment. Though I point out that there are conflicting views on the relationship between global warming and extreme events. Some people believe, based upon good analysis, that you can see clear evidence of increased extremes associated with global warming, and others believe that similar evidence doesn't support that association. It depends on exactly what problem you're looking at, how you're looking at, what statistical rigor you're bringing to the equation. So it's very much out there in terms of scientific debate. If the statement in the IPCC was definitive, i.e. there is absolutely definitive evidence of an increase in extremes associated with global warming, that isn't defensible. But if the statement is that there seems to be evidence of increasing extremes, that probably is defensible. It depends exactly how it was phrased.
Now, you say that these two errors don't really undermine the central argument of the IPCC. But one of the expert reviewers who picked up the Himalayan glaciers error says that, look, these sorts of errors are made because the IPCC reports are just so large and complex. Many reports and books are large and complex. Is this a good enough excuse?
I'm not sure I'm aware of any reports quite as complex as the first and second reports of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They are synthesis and examination of thousands and thousands of peer-reviewed papers at the very cutting edge of international science. And to have made a couple of mistakes in, as I said, 1,600 pages of a report seems to me to be a quite amazing level of accuracy.
Well, you say they're just a couple of mistakes. You say they're not significant and don't damage the reputation of the IPCC. But how much ammunition do you think it's given to the climate change sceptics?
Oh, considerable. But that's a very different issue. The climate sceptics, most of the climate sceptics, particularly those that are wandering around publicly at the moment, don't base their arguments on the science. They've probably never read the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report. They aren't writing papers in the peer-reviewed literature. They don't update their arguments when their arguments are shown to be false. So they'll have no problem at all using this ammunition inappropriately and out of context to further their aims, in exactly the same way as people did when they were trying to disprove the relationship between smoking and human health. It's clear that increased CO2 and other greenhouse gases are causing climate change, but it certainly won't stop the sceptics misusing the information for their own purposes.
How much damage, then, do you think this sort of sloppiness on the part of the IPCC has done?
My personal view is the climate scientists are losing the fight with the sceptics. That the sceptics are so well funded, so well organized, have nothing else to do, they kind of don't have day jobs, they can put all of their efforts into misinforming and miscommunicating climate science to the general public, whereas the climate scientists have day jobs, and this actually isn't one of them. All of the efforts you do in an IPCC report is done out of hours voluntarily for no funding and no pay. Therefore, most employers want their employees to be focusing on their core business and core jobs, whereas the skeptics are being funded to put out full-scale misinformation campaigns, and they're doing a damn good job, I think. They are doing a superb job at misinforming and miscommunicating the general public, state, and federal governments.
You say you're losing the debate. How worried are you about that?
I think it's potentially catastrophic. If this was some academic debate over some trivial issue, so we're losing an academic debate over some trivial issue, but this isn't. This is absolutely a fundamental problem for the Earth that we desperately needed full-scale international action on a decade ago. We're now 10 years too late to stop some of the major impacts that we will see and have seen as a consequence of global warming. It's not a future problem. It's a problem here today around us.
Professor Pittman, thanks very much for joining us.
You're very welcome.